Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, host of the Her Podcast. Hey, welcome to the show in episode number 463 as we share the truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today, her incredible fitness journey. Oh my gosh, from a fitness leader. This is going to be such a special show and one that I know will touch you deeply. Before we begin, just know that the episode is sponsored by Solaray Vitamins, S-O-L-A-R-A-Y, vitamins, minerals, and herbs rooted in nature. They have a special gift for women, the new award-winning Her Life Stages products, providing support for women all the way from her menstrual years through perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause. Kind of an integrative, holistic approach to a woman's entire life journey. To learn more about her life stages, run on over to your local health food store or check them out at solaray.com and use promo code HER20 for 20% off. You'll be glad you did. Yes. All right, so here's your first reminder to click on iTunes to rate and review today's show because, well, the Her Podcast team loves to hear from you. Yes, your feedback is that important. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
I get to play today. I do. I love to invite my friends to the Her Sandbox. Yes, it's a Her Sandbox. You know it is. So today we're going to be talking about wild and crazy fitness. And this is from the president-elect of the American College of Sports Medicine. And as you're well aware, I've been on their board. I'm now on their foundation board. They can't seem to get rid of me. It's all good. And I'm working on those committees and just having a damn good time. And who are we talking to? We are talking to Dr. Stella Volpe. Stella, welcome to the Her Podcast.
Oh, Pam, it is such an honor. Thanks for asking me. It's so great. You're right. It's just so cool. And I'm so excited when you invited me. Thank you.
All right. For everyone out there, in addition to being the president-elect of the American College of Sports Medicine, Dr. Volpe is also professor and head of the Department of Human Nutrition, Foods, and Exercise at Virginia Tech. Try to get into Virginia Tech sometime. I actually know two people who just finally got in. Oh my gosh, it's so hard to get into that school. Her degrees are in both nutrition and exercise physiology. Talk about well-rounded. She is also in the American College of Sports Medicine as a certified clinical exercise physiologist, a registered dietitian, nutritionist, and also a fellow of the American College of Sports Medicine. And her research focuses on obesity and diabetes prevention. And she also conducts research on athletes at all levels. Who? That means you. All right. So Stella, good grief. I was so excited to have you on. I just saw you the other day on some godforsaken meeting that was taking place at O'Dark 100 because there's so many people who are on the West Coast and we got to include them, and that's for sure. But here I am, right? I woke up this morning, had my little cappuccino from my cappuccino machine. There you go, a little Italian moment for Dr. Volpe. And I'm reading an article in the Wall Street Journal, How a Break from Alcohol Affects Your Health and Fitness Goals. And it's written by our favorite writer, Jen Murphy. So I'm like, okay, you got my attention. Let's see what the latest research shows. So I'm reading through this whole thing, you know, and then it says alcohol harms workouts. And then I come up to the first quote from an expert. Alcohol cancels out the effects of exercise, says Dr. Stella Volpe, department head of nutrition, blah, 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 at Virginia Tech. And I just laughed. I almost spilled my cappuccino. I said, talk about timing. Damn thing comes out the same time I'm doing a podcast. So, I mean, this was such, first of all, I just want to dive into this for a second. This is wild. So what I love is when the Wall Street Journal and other high-level, credible media outlets reach out to true experts in the field who have, how shall we say this, street cred. You've got all of the degrees, you're heading the department, you know what you're doing. So it made me very happy to see that so many multimedia outlets are now doing the right thing and not just talking to Joe Trainer down the street, God bless them, and they're wonderful. But I love it to come from experts who are doing the actual research and everything. So tell us about alcohol and workouts. And I'll quote right back at you from the article.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you want to just quote it, that could be easier for me, Pam. But, well, research has shown, you know, and some of that research actually was done by folks like Louise Burke and her crew down in Australia. And I know, Dr. Peak, you know Dr. Burke.
Oh, yeah.
You know, some of that work showed that if you consume alcohol post-exercise, even if you add in carbohydrates, say, or add in protein, they might decrease the loss of muscle mass you would have gained, but you can lose upwards of 30 to 40% of that muscle synthesis. And I'll say it to you and your audience, it's called officially myofibrillar protein synthesis, but the muscle gain you would have gotten from that activity, actually almost half of it is going to be lost. So I wasn't sort of saying never drink, but definitely not post-exercise. Get your hydration in first, get some food in first, enjoy that glass of wine or a bottle of beer later.
Well, you know, it was really interesting. When I was reading, this was all about the reporter, Jen Murphy, who we all know is sort of the fitness person. She's fabulous, love her. She had a dry January. She just decided, I mean, like, she's not an alcoholic or something. She just wanted to kind of know, like, hey, you know, I usually do like, you know, a glass of wine for dinner and da-da-da and whatever. Let's just see what happens. And so she was looking at metrics. And are you surprised when she looked at her Whoop fitness tracker? And that's W-H-O-O-P for people out there. You can look it up. It's just another one of those fitness trackers. But what she found throughout the entire month of, as it were, going a whole lot drier, was that her heart rate decreased and her heart rate variability doubled. Now, let's talk about what that means, because both of those things are actually good. So what does that mean?
Her heart rate slowing down. Let's talk about that. We know that if we have a more efficient heart, if we have a heart that doesn't have to work as hard. Now, we also know that under disease conditions, people can have a low heart rate, but in a healthy individual, having a lower resting heart rate means that with every beat of the heart doesn't have to work as hard to get the blood out, right? I'm telling you something you know, but for your audience. And then the heart rate variability, having a heart rate variability that's sort of varied is actually a good thing. That might sound counterintuitive, right? But for example, if I go out running, I would certainly expect my heart rate to go up, meaning that from the start to the finish, there should be a variability in my heart rate. So if it stays really tight during like exercise and rest, one, it could mean that someone's on something like a beta blocker, as you well know, or it could mean something else that's going on that you want to have some variability in your heart rate when it comes to rest versus exercise, or rest versus even if I'm walking, it should go up a little, but that variability should, I guess an easier way to say it is, should be analogous to the intensity of the exercise or activity you're doing. How's that? That's probably the better way to say it. So therefore, if I'm resting, and then if I do a little something, it might go up a little. If I do something more, it should go up a little more. And that's why her variability likely increased, and alcohol may have blunted some of that response because of even the timing that she consumed her alcohol.
Oh, there's no question about that. And that is amazing. So now it messes with your sleep.
Oh, yes, it does.
Okay, so here I'm not like sticking my finger at your face, but I've got my Aura ring on and I'm like obsessed, right? I've been wearing this now for a couple of years, tracking my progress, and I've gotten like really into my REM sleep and my deep sleep and latency and the whole damn thing. So what I have found is that if, you know, I had a celebratory night, it, something great happened, yay, that last Nature publication, and you have that little glass of wine or whatever, and let's just say I had it at a reasonable time, like, you know, 7 o'clock, 7:30, it wasn't like I was up until one or something. But what I notice is that my heart rate goes up, my heart rate variability comes down because it's an inverse relationship for all intents and purposes. My REM sleep is nowhere near as good. And the same thing goes with my deep sleep. So in other words, my sleep got messed with. It's not like I had a bender all night or something. It didn't really take a lot to see that. So if you're someone who really wants to get up in the morning and kind of nail that workout and really stay mindful and awake and engaged with what you're eating and really kind of on target, it's hard to do when you have an issue with alcohol messing with your sleep. What do you think?
I absolutely agree. I am not a big drinker at all. Like, I hardly drink. It's just I don't. And so when I do have, yes, a small glass of wine, it relaxes you initially, right? It makes you feel calm initially. But once you get to try to fall asleep, it will reduce that deep sleep. And no matter what type of athlete you are, recreational, professional, elite, all of that, be very aware of the effects it can have on your body. Because kind of like caffeine, and Pam, you know this, alcohol is both a relaxant and a stimulant.
Right.
Therefore, that initial one, you can feel your shoulders relaxing. And, you know, even like with just a little wine and it feels good. And then all of a sudden you try to go to sleep and it's not working. So people should be very aware of that, especially if they have a big race the next day, whatever it is, a competition. It doesn't matter, again, what level, to be aware that it can affect them, even if they have a glass of wine every night, but in particular, if they don't.
So, you know, I loved what Jen Murphy said in that one section. She said, less boozing, more snoozing. And I was like, bring it on. And the metrics, you know, she showed some pretty interesting numbers. And this is the work from the University of Sussex, 2019, found that 71% of those who embarked on dry January reported better sleep. 67% said they were more energetic. And I file all of this under keen grasp of the obvious. Okay, you're not going to, you know, be doing a whole lot of excellent athletics when you're drinking it up one way or the other. The way I like to look at it is it involves planning. You know, if you're going to be up in the morning and you really want to, you know, do a great workout and all the rest of it, please don't be drinking it up the night before, because it's not going to help the situation. And to your point, you know, the whole thing falls apart. Just, you know, the plan, the program. So I love this. I think this article was more fun than I know what to do with. And then the final thing is, hey, guys, you gain weight.
It's calories, right? People often forget that any liquid of any kind, except for water, of course, they forget sometimes about the calories. Sometimes you and I do, probably, right? We're in the fields and we kind of think, oh, you know, this glass of milk or this glass of wine, whatever. And you don't think liquids often have calories. But yes, there's 7 calories a gram for alcohol in general. It gets metabolized differently, as you know. And so it's really, really important for people to be aware. And as a side note, Pam, we are going to be doing research on the Oura Ring. So I love that you've been wearing one for a couple of years. Yes.
I know you're probably dealing with the chief science officer over there and the rest of it. I actually knew the CEO before the current one. You're going to love this out there in the Herb podcast land. So I gave a keynote at Health, HLTH, the big health meeting in Boston a couple of years ago. I happened to have met the Oura CEO at that time, Raj Singh, who's a trip and a half. And so I walked up to him, and remember this a couple of years ago. So I said, hey, listen, great product, all good stuff. I'm using it in research. It's good. But what's up with your website? Your website is tech bro. It's all for men. It's black. It's uninteresting. There's not a single thing there that says, welcome women. And then I asked him the acid question. What percentage of your customers are women? And he got kind of quiet and he goes, 20%. I said, 20%? What are you, crazy? We're the ones who are in the majority out here. We buy all this stuff. And so he said, listen, you're going to be happy to know that I've been yelled and screamed at by enough women by now. And we are in the process of changing everything over there at the website. Now, if you go to the Oura website, and that's O-U-R-A for people who may not have heard about this digital ring. If you go there now, whoa, they've got all kinds of great tracking on menstrual cycles and all kinds of good stuff and yoga and relaxation. And it's really kind of cool. So I was happy to see somebody listen.
It's wonderful. Well, I think you're quite convincing, Pam. So that's good to know too.
All right. Now that I got the Wall Street Journal thing out of the way, because it was way too much fun. All my team said to me, ask her all those questions. Let's see what she has to say, because this thing just came out. We want to know. So here's the deal. We're going to step back about 20 paces. One of the things that I discovered about you a while back is that you're a master's athlete. Now, what's really cool about this, and you know, I do the same thing as a senior Olympics, right? We oftentimes as experts, you know, sometimes maybe assume that we're just sort of talking from on high, that we don't sweat and we don't get our little nails dirty, and we're just sort of pontificating about a lot of research. And meanwhile, you know, the common person out there is saying, well, wait a minute, what do they know about anything? And what I love are experts who walk the talk, who you not only have a passion for the whole field of fitness, nutrition, basically healthy living, but live it and can speak from the front trenches. Would you tell everyone about your athletic history? Like, when did all this start?
Okay. So, well, it started when I was really young. I'm the youngest of four, always competitive with my siblings. And so I started, oh my goodness, probably like not that I was ever a good gymnast, but you know, when I was young and always started just being active and then it got more competitive in junior, well, what we call junior high and high school. But it was started in elementary school with, you know, softball and basketball, volleyball, those things that I liked, but then field hockey was something that I really enjoyed. Winter and spring track. I did some gymnastics. I did lacrosse. And then I did triathlons, marathon, those things as I, you know, got out of college because I played field hockey throughout college, but continued with field hockey, club sports, coaching, reffing, as well as playing and triathlons, as I said. And then when I was a professor way back at UMass, one of my students said, you should try rowing. And she was a great rower. And so I joined the women's club. And so I added rowing, kept playing field hockey. And then at the age of 46, I started ice hockey, which I love and have always loved. But Pam, I think we're maybe close in age to say that when we were younger, ice hockey for women was not available. And so I started playing all that. And then I just like for my workout base, you know, I was going to the gym still with all that. But then I heard about this thing called CrossFit. So I started that coming up on 16 years ago. And that's sort of my base every morning of what I do for like for my other sports, if you will. And then with field hockey, I was excited when a USA field hockey offered tryouts for the World Cup for masters. And so I tried out in 2017, made it for the 2018 Outdoor World Cup. And then I was on the team again in 2023 because it should have been 22 because of COVID. So we were in Cape Town in the fall. I will be going. I made the indoor World Cup for 22, but then COVID, we couldn't play. So I'll be going to the indoor World Cup in Nottingham, England coming up. And then our kind of the masters folks sometimes not representing USA, like we played in a tournament in Italy in the summer. We're going to play in the Netherlands in the summer. So it's been a real blessing to do it. Like I always say, I feel really blessed and fortunate that I'm able to do it. That our age doesn't matter. It's not a disease. We can do what we can do, right? And then I can afford to do this too, because some of the things, you know, do take finances. So for both of them, but I know that everybody can't do it at the same time. I really encourage people, try something new, have fun with it, have confidence in yourself, and that, okay, if maybe you're not going to do something that's on a team, maybe it's by yourself, but nonetheless, challenging yourself to do something within yourself that's fun and can be helpful and helps our fitness and also our motor skills, because as we get older, those can change as well.
How old do you have to be to do the masters that you're doing?
For field hockey, it starts at age 35. So we have age groups of 30, like instead of under, we have 35 for over, so 35 to 40, and then increments of fives. And we actually have an 065 team, and we'll probably have an 070 team at some point, like the men's go up to 070. So I just turned 60 in the summer. So I switched my age group to 60 to 65.
Yeah, but here's the cool thing. You're the youngest on the, you know, in the Senior Olympics, it's the same thing. We just keep going, I want to be the youngest. The joke with the Senior Olympics, I'm sure, is for you. Well, for a lot of the individual competition, is that you just want to live long enough so that just by showing up, you medal. One of the best things I've ever seen, because I do the triathlon, is they have these three women who just sort of rotate around, and they're like, one is like 91 or, you know, whatever. I'm not kidding. And little skinny people who just show up, and man, they just rock it. But, you know, it's all relative to being in your late 80s and then like 90-ish and whatever. And there's like three of them who show up. So what they do is they battle for whichever medal, but they're all going to walk away. So my goal, it was like, ding, you know, the light bulb went off. I said, hey, I want to just survive long enough so I show up and I medal. Oh my gosh, that would be so funny. But yeah, I love this. And I think that one of the things that's really cool about having you on, Stella, is that you're a world rank researcher in the field. You are a leader in the fitness academic community. And it's so wonderful to hear that you sweat and grunt and have to train just like everyone. And that's wonderful. My question to you is this: how do you organize a day when you've got so many, I mean, you're a department chair, so when you have so many obligations, how do you like crowbar in your training? How does that work? What's a day look like for you?
That's a really good question. And my students would argue that I don't sleep, but sleep is important. I do go early to CrossFit, and then, but I get up a little early, like at 4:30 or so. I will work a little bit before I go to work out, and then come home, get ready for work, come to work, and then oftentimes it's evenings. So sometimes we practice field hockey by Zoom because we have people all over the country. This past weekend, I did go up to Pennsylvania to train, so you have to try to do that as well. So sometimes like things like ice hockey or nighttime, you know, there's two a days in the sense that you might have CrossFit in the morning and then rowing at night, or not that late, but that's how it usually works out. And not everything's every night, right? And sometimes with like field hockey can be on Saturday where you have something as well, but there's where you have to try to fit it in, is you try to do, not everything is every night, but the baseline of CrossFit's pretty much every day. And then the other stuff is mixed in so that I can get them in. And sometimes it's training on my own too, now that I've moved down to Virginia Tech, or I've actually worked out with some of the Virginia Tech field hockey club as well. But that's kind of how it works. And you probably understand that because with triathlons, and I know when I was training, you couldn't do everything every day, and you had to parse out which ones you were going to do and try to also fit it into your lifestyle, right? The cycling, if you can cycle somewhere that's farther away, at least I used to do those kinds of things, even in days when I was, still a student and less busy. So it can be tough. And I definitely have to really be very disciplined, because sometimes I have, for American College of Sports Medicine, as you know, we have meetings a lot of times at night, which is good because all of us are working and different time zones. It can work. It just can be tough. And you do have to be a bit disciplined.
How's family time look?
Family time's good. And sometimes, you know, I'll say that it's good. And sometimes you feel like your ship's in the night, you know, with your husband or whatever, like you feel like there's those things, but it works fine. And having a supportive family, as you know, is really what counts, right? Like that's really helpful and that's important. And I'm so grateful for them.
You absolutely have to have the support. I mean, that is, if you don't have that, I mean, it's just another rock to roll up the hill, and you don't need that. So I'm just glad that everything has fallen together for you with all of that. And I just think that that adds such a great level of credibility to your leadership work with ACSM. What is your goal as president? I'm just like, you know, we're going to definitely nail you for another podcast when you're actually president, which occurs in May at our big convention, this time in Boston, which I'm going to see you and coffee time. But what is your vision? Like, I'm going to ask for a little teaser alert. Teaser alert.
I love that you asked me. And I really do love that you asked me. And thank you for saying such nice things. Because, you know, I also want to make sure that, you know, your listeners know this, right? All of us are human and all of us, what I'm saying, you know, it's not always perfect every day, right? And I know they know that and you know that. But sometimes when you hear people talking, oh, wow, you know, so I just, not every day works as perfectly as we like, right? Because we're all human and days are days. But thank you for saying that, because I do feel really fortunate with all these things. And yet, as you know, all these things also keep us busy. But my vision, I'm not trying to evade your question. My vision for ACSM is I do want to increase our membership. As a physician, I'm going to tell you, I, of course, want to increase our physician membership as well. But I also want to, and I'm not just saying that because you're a physician, I also want to really increase our younger memberships, increase their membership, and then keep them there. So I know, like, once my graduate students come with me, even my undergraduates, they're like, oh my gosh, we're hooked. As soon as we can get them hooked, Pam, because you and I know, I mean, I've been a member since I was a senior in college. And it's, you know, going to the regional meetings, good chapters, going to the annual meeting. Once you go, you're hooked. And as soon as I can get students there, but if I can do something in my presidency to get more members, not just to grow the membership, but to grow our up and coming, which sounds very cliche-ish, I know, but we need to have the up and coming, right? We need to have a good base of people who are at ACSM for a good part of their career so that when they do stuff like you and I do, that they have a sense of the community of ACSM, and that ACSM is the premier sports medicine scientific organization.
Excellent. I say hear, hear to that. You know, I've been at it for over 30 years with ACSM. You know, that came out of running right out of medical school and attending my very first one, just discovering what was out there, because as you're obviously well aware, they don't teach this in medical school. And so I had to go outside and figure this out and become a fellow and do that whole thing. So you said something really interesting. You piqued my interest. And when you said, hey, out there in the Herb podcast land, nothing's ever perfect. Tell us about a tough challenge. Teach us how you were able to do a workaround, how you dealt with a tough challenge that really kind of maybe upset the apple cart of your otherwise excellent little staying on course plan.
Oh man, that's a tough question. I mean, not to say that there haven't been challenges. I'm just trying to think of what could I bring forward to you. Okay, I don't know that it's a good workaround, and I don't know if it's a good example. So if it isn't, you can cut this out and I'll give you another one, right? So, you know, the first time I ran for president that I was asked to run, it was when I was vice president. Janet Rankin, who I think you know well, who was one of my advisors here at Virginia Tech a long time ago, she's the one who called me, right, to ask me if I wanted to run, which was, of course, an honor. And I said, yes, but I lost that first time, Pam. And so I thought I probably never would have been asked again. And when Nicole Keith, who I think you also know, asked me to run again, I was so taken that I actually did cry. You know, this Italian, I cry when I'm happy, cry when I'm sad. I joke with people about that. But the other thing that comes in your head is I could lose again. And so, again, I don't know if this is a good example because there's so many other things I could share with you in leadership that happens. But in that regard, I guess what I'd like to share with people is if you don't put yourself out there, and you and I have positions where we are out there. And so when you put yourself out there, you have an increased risk of getting criticized. And I get that. But if you don't put yourself out there, then you, as I tell my students, we'll never get that grant if we don't apply. You'll never get that fellowship or scholarship if you don't apply. If we don't put ourselves out there to try, even with the World Cup stuff, you know, I was playing with Olympians. I really didn't have the same what I feel like is CV as some of them had. So for me, and my husband would keep telling me, you are worthy, you made the team, right? So I know that was a little digression and my apologies for that. But I guess my point is that putting yourself out there can be challenging and risky, but those risks can have a lot of rewards. If sometimes those risks that you are putting yourself out there doesn't come out, quote unquote, the way you planned, you still grow from it. I grew so much from the fact that I ran. I was happy I ran. And then when I was asked again, I thought I could lose again, but you know what? I definitely will lose if I don't run.
Interesting. I love that. You know, the podcast that I just did was with a track and field star, a sprinter who is 70, began doing her sprinting at the age of 57. And one of the things I find is that physical fitness, whether it's with a sport, you know, competitive or otherwise, or just getting out there and, you know, doing that little 5K on your own or, you know, with some friends or something, can be very healing, extremely healing. It can help people get through all kinds of things. And I love to use it as a metaphor for life. I ran the New York Marathon with a crazy bunch of women, my patients. They were called the Peak Performers, and we did it with Prevention Magazine. It was a riot. And go figure, it was 6 weeks after 9/11. I mean, talk about a memorable one. I bring that up because I had t-shirts that Prevention made that said, the marathon is a metaphor for life. And so if I can get through that first mile, if I can get through that next 5 miles, if I can get through the half marathon, whatever, and you do that. And I listened to every single woman for years after that, and they never stopped saying that. They held on to that t-shirt like you've never seen. This is one of the reasons why I'm a little crazy person about fitness per se. And when you said that thing about, well, you know, I didn't make it the first time with, you know, the election and the rest of it, I'll put money on it, and, you know, and be careful because I make money from my best, but I'll put money on it that when you were kind of like wrapping your head around that loss, that you found solace in your workouts.
You were absolutely right. Solace in my workouts, and you and I know solace with our dogs. Because the walking with them, I always say, is that wonderful time. And it's still exercise. So, but yes, solace in my workouts. And I have to bring this up because it's so funny, this other connection that you brought up about its metaphor for life. So yesterday, I literally gave a talk to Virginia Tech Women's Club on exercising and eating for mental health, talking about how just going out to walk. Again, you don't have to do a marathon. You don't have to do triathlons. You can just go out and walk or run or walk with your dogs or your kids or whomever, your friends. Do whatever it is that makes you feel good to get moving. It just matters to be moving, right? That movement can quiet so many things, like you said. Absolutely. I remember after I got the call, what did I do? Even though I had already worked out, I went, thankfully, I had a little time and I went to take my dogs for another walk because, you know, they can always go. And it just was so helpful for me because I kept saying, okay, after I called my husband, I was just like, Stella, you're going to be fine. This is okay. You're going to be fine. You were lucky enough to be asked and you will still continue to give to an organization that is my main scientific organization.
I can tell you that, you know, we share the German Shepherd connection. You know, these precious shepherds of mine are absolutely therapeutic. I mean, it's like, okay, it's been a rough day. Come on, guys. And the good news is they're athletes. And so, you know, they just sit there going, come on, you know, is it the 13th walk of the day? No problem. I'm on it. Now, the reason why I brought up this other woman who's the 70-year-old sprinter is she had a really interesting way of putting things. She'd been through a lot. Her original coach, as it were, when she started really running at the age of 57, was her husband, who had been a track and field coach and this and that. He passed away eventually, early on, passed away pretty quickly from cancer. And they'd been married 42 years, and it was a tough one. And, you know, during the interview, it was obvious how deeply this affected her. But the physical activity, she continued, his dying words were, you never stop running. And so she said, okay, I'm going to continue to do that. I'll take his spirit forward, et cetera. And then I asked her, I said, well, wow. So physical activity was very healing for you, wasn't it? And she said, absolutely. And then I said, well, the tough times in life, you know, just like I asked you. She said, yeah, I've been rejected a lot through, you know, she's a corporate person and the usual stuff that happens in life. And she told of one story about rejection. And she said, as I got older and more mature and really started thinking about this whole thing, she said, you know, if you're really wise, rejection leads to reflection. And therefore, there's that little walk with the dogs. You know, you're kind of reflecting, like, why did that happen? What's up with that? What doors were opened, not just closed? What doors were opened? And how can I make this work? And then she said, it goes from rejection to reflection to motivation. It's like, oh, but wait a minute, I learned something. What's the lesson? And then from motivation to growth. You know, you actually grow from the whole experience. And I think that glue that helps hold all of this together is self-care. Because as we know from the Blue Zones research, that in every single culture, in the Italians, Sardinia, they all have a word for it. You probably already know what it is. And that is living a life of meaning and purpose. When you take care of yourself, you wake up in the morning, you've got a discipline. You have a plan. You pop out of bed. You're going to take care of yourself. You're going to be of service to others. However you do that in your life, that's huge meaning and purpose. But, you know, moving your body, honoring, respecting, and enjoying, cherishing a body that can give you joy is so healing, I have found, in so many people's lives. What do you think of that?
It's so true. I mean, I really feel grateful that I like to work out. And I even hate to say work out, right? Be active. Because yes, you and I work out, and there are many people listening who work out. But I want to make sure that it's just being active, moving, doing the things you love. And also, you said something about with the Blue Zones. You know, one of the other things that you know about that is social connection. And that in particular, like, so yesterday at this women's club, it was so cool. They have 240 members. Not all were there, but all women. So you would have loved that, you know, that we had this her. I love the name of your podcast. And just when I saw them and they talked about the things they do together, they do yoga together. They will do trips together. Some of it is activity. And some of them would do, you know, might take walks together, et cetera. It's not like I asked all of them what they did, right? But it is so true. Anytime I am active, you know, whatever it is, whatever I'm doing, whether it's walking or being competitive, you are in such a sense of self, but also a sense of awareness, but also a sense of zero awareness. Does that make sense? Because I'm letting go of anything that might be going on in my head or my life. I need to, and it's good that I do it, and it's helpful. It's helpful for the rest of your day or the evening, whatever time you work out or, you know, you're physically fit. Is all of that is so helpful.
I just love this. You know, it's where, I mean, I could talk to you forever, but then I get to do that anyway because I know you. So here's the deal. As we bring this to a close, because we've really hit on so many incredibly cool topics, what I'd like you to do is address a woman, or a lot of women listening to this podcast, who are not feeling like they're on top of their game, and maybe they're not in the world's greatest shape because life got to them and back and forth, and they're looking for H-O-P-E, hope. So what could they do to start this journey to taking better care of themselves on the overall, not just about fitness? It's a holistic integrative approach, and your background speaks to that beautifully with your degrees. So what would you, as a national expert and the incoming president of the American College of Sports Medicine say to these beautiful women who want to understand how to take that first step?
I would say if we're talking first about activity, that you don't need to go out and run a marathon. You don't even need to go out and run. That doing little things every day add up and getting yourself moving, even if it's someone who lives in a sort of a smaller apartment, can't get out at night, even moving in your apartment, dancing, you know, with I was telling people yesterday, dance during commercials when you're watching TV, little things like that add up. You know, I stole that from one of my colleagues down in South America. So they dance with their children at every commercial, and I find that beautiful. So even if it's by yourself, if you don't have anyone in, you know, in your home, to just try to get yourself moving a little bit, to start with something good about yourself. Say to yourself, you know, that you are good at, be positive. That self-awareness. But trying to be active every day, and that research shows us multiple times a day is equally as effective as a single bout. But also with food, I try to tell people to say, I'm cutting this out, I would rather them say, why don't you add some berries every day to your meals? Because we know that things like blueberries help our mind, you know, or I'm going to add oatmeal or whatever, some really good for you food that tastes good that they like, that is added to their diet. And so to me, what I really try to tell people, and I hope those listening, even if one takes this up, is that it doesn't take big steps. Like, it doesn't take a lot to move ourselves into this positive way of maybe changing our lifestyles for more positive lifestyle, being more active, eating better. It doesn't take a lot, but it just starts small. And that's what I would tell people. Don't think you need to go and make huge changes in your diet, huge changes in your activity. Start small, grow from there. Try to find someone with whom you can do it as well. That can be helpful too, to have a partner, a good friend, family member, your dogs, anybody who you can be active with.
That is a beautiful way to end this. It makes me remember the great writer Leo Tolstoy once said that the two great warriors are time and patience. That's how this whole thing works. It's just take a breath, stay present, one small step at a time. And with that, all I can say is I can't thank you enough, Stella. It's so wonderful to see you. We see each other on so many weird platforms, but what you've done was you've gifted everyone with your beautiful wisdom, and we so appreciate that. So thank you so much for being a guest on the Her Podcast. And of course, you'll become a repeat offender. We'll be circling back.
Thank you, Pam, for having me, and thanks everyone for listening. I'm really, really grateful. This was special. Thank you.
Awesome. And here's another shout out to our sponsor, Solaray, Solaray, and that is for the Her Life Stages products. So run on over to your health food store and ask them all about Her Life Stages. If you're going to the website, solaray.com, you're going to be using the promo code HER20 for 20% off. Look, this has been another amazing Her Podcast. I'm Dr. Pam Peek, your host. I want to thank each and every one of you for listening in and being such an important part of our Her Podcast community. Pop on over to drpeek.com to learn more about my work and social media. Join me every week for another Her Podcast, where you're going to hear from extraordinary, entertaining, and engaging thought leaders like Dr. Stella Volpe as we share our wit and wisdom for you to enjoy. Thanks so much, and remember that your time in this world may be limited, but the things you can do with that time are not. So get on out there and seize the day. Have a great one.